Right, welcome everybody to the first episode of the Back to the Office podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris Phelps, and my co-host, and as always, great friend, is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to Back to the Office, the show where we journey back to Slough's premier paper merchant, Wernham Hogg, where life is stationary.
What?
You like that, don't you? A little surprise there. I thought that might throw you off.
Yeah, it has.
Now, Chris, we absolutely love The Office. And, you know, we've told this across many podcasts, but in case we've got new listeners out there who aren't familiar with us, you know, you and I joined, well, I joined your band back in the mid-2000s, and one of the things that we bonded over was this love, this unconditional love we had at The Office. And some of the other guys in the band were like, I don't get it, it's not funny. But I have to know, because I don't think I'm aware of this, where did your love of The Office first start?
I've been thinking about this before we recorded, but my brother actually watched it by chance. He just randomly, I was married then, so I was a couple of years into being married, 2 or 3 years. Literally the second episode in, my brother got on it, and he remember him saying to me, like, this show on BBC Two is so funny. And I'm like, yeah, what? I never heard of Ricky Gervais. I was like, I don't even know what it's about. And initially, I thought it was a mockumentary. I thought it was a real, so I suppose a document, not a mockumentary.
Documentary.
Yeah, and I genuinely thought it was real. And then when I watched it, I thought straight away, oh, this is just a piss take. Like, what is it? And I got into it about the third episode. So obviously we didn't have BBC iPlayer. We didn't have the hindsight of being able to go back. You were reliant on it being, you know, I had a recordable Skybox, but you were reliant on it coming on again. And literally fell in love with it, Dave. I was there from the beginning within the third episode. Got the first two episodes. I can't remember how. I watched them pretty soon. And then I remember buying the DVDs. I've got all of them. The only one, I think there's only one, I think one of the Christmas presents I haven't got, but I just love the situational comedy and Ricky Gervais' observation stuff. And like you say, me and you became good friends in the band and just kindred spirits, because we would literally do stupid references to each other in rehearsals or something and laugh. And everyone else would be like, these two are a pair of knobs. Can you remember the guitarist used to say, and he's a member of my family, and he's watched The Office now about 18 months ago, and he absolutely loves it. And he even admits that he went, I never understood you and Dave going on about it. And he binged all of them, Derek, extras, everything, and he loves him now. So it's just stuck with me for years, and I've got some cracking stories to tell about The Office as well, Dave. So what about yourself?
Nice. Well, I think before I get into the actual watching, I think I have to set the context, because I started my first proper job. You know, I'd had like part-time jobs and stuff before that, but my first proper job, I started in 1999. And in that time, I was based in an office, but I would probably be somewhere like 70, 80% of my time was out at customer sites. So I got to travel around the world and stuff. That was pretty cool. So I'd spend a minimal amount of time in the office in that first year. And then around kind of midway 2000, I got to spend a lot more time in the office. You know, I'd kind of earned my spurs doing all of that traveling, and then, you know, spent more time in the office. When this came on in 2001, it was my partner at the time who, you know, had it on. And I started to watch it, and I thought, oh, it was like an electric shock or fingernails down the chalkboard. I was like, oh, you know what? That's terrible. It reminds me of work. And actually, I only realized looking back now, I had all these kind of, not intolerances, but these little annoyances about office life that I couldn't articulate. And I couldn't really, you know, put into words properly what was annoying me about being in the office. And when I watched this, I just saw my office. I saw so many characters from my office. It was like, oh, I just can't watch it. And then after that kind of first experience, I kind of broke through that threshold. I started watching it again. And I was like, all right, this is a piss take. Because I went through the same thing as you. I'm like, is this real? Is it a piss take? I don't know if it is or not. again, this is, you know, before everything's on the internet and you know everything about a show before it even airs. So once I broke through that barrier and I understood the joke a bit more. I mean, it's not a sitcom, is it? That's something Gervais and Stephen Merchant were absolutely passionate about. They didn't want this to be a sitcom. And, you know, making it in this kind of mockumentary style gave it just a different feel to everything else. And it was one of those, once I started to understand the cleverness to the writing and what they were doing, I just fell in love with the whole series, but especially David Brent. Because I tell you, Chris, that first boss of mine was fucking David Brent. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, there'll be loads of references back to it. But again, it gave you a kind of language. You know, and I remember when it got more and more popular, certainly, because I guess it was a bit of a sleeper hit, wasn't it? Because it was just on BBC Two, you know, no one really knew much about it. But, you know, through word of mouth, it got more and more popular. And, you know, by the time the second series came, everyone in the office was watching it. And then someone would say something in the office, you'd be like, well, it's David Brent, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I remember printing out a piece of paper, which was Brent's guide to working in the office. And the one that I remember, the one tip was walk through the office with a piece of paper in your hand, you know, in a rush, and then people will think you were really busy. That's fucking brilliant. I'm sure people I've worked with in the past do little tricks like that just to make themselves look busy. But yeah, so that's it. And since then, the way it broke through so many barriers for me, the way it was just completely different. I know we'd had things like Spinal Tap, which was another mockumentary, but I think this was a level above that. Even though I do love Spinal Tap as well, this was different level. And you know what, Chris? I just never get bored of it. I never get bored of going back. I bought it on video initially, you know, even though it was the 2000s, I still had a bloody video, and then bought it on DVD as well. Ex-wife sold them off, so re-bought it on DVD again. I just absolutely love it.
It's funny, you know, because I think why I fell in love with it, I ended up starting leaving school in 95, did college for a year, electrical engineering. I never wanted to work in an office ever. I wanted to use my hands, always have done it. I just one of them people, I always wanted to be practically doing something physically, having a hammer or a screwdriver in my hand. I just didn't want to be in an office, but fate had told that I got a job at Manchester Airport. I was trying to be a fireman. I was trying to get in on the electrical engineering apprenticeships. They'd frozen them just as I started there. So I got offered an admin job and ended up working in like engineering for 3 years. Then I did a year in payroll with about 12 women and I was the only guy in there. And I really did not like that one bit, Dave. and literally the bosses were just a farce. People, when I worked at the airport, were a farce. And one of the things I did, and this is why it relates to the office, is when this came out, I was working in near my house. We just had Jordan, our daughter, and I still wanted to get out of working in an office. I ended up being a buyer for a telecoms company, and I hated it. I fucking hated it. But everyone at work loved the office. And luckily, by 2005, I got out and I've done 15-year stint as a maintenance engineer, which, you know, I am back in the office now because I'm like the team leader, half and half. But I have got that freedom being able to go out and just do some physical stuff. But I did something David Brent like, Dave. Now, I lost my job at Manchester Airport. This is why I love the office. I lost my job at Manchester Airport in 2000, just before this came out. My own doing, I was a balloon head. Mr. Comedy here, Mr. I am so funny, it's untrue, I should be on stage, decided to, they had a chief exec's breakfast every month, and it could be an air, you could be a pilot, you could be cleaning the toilets, you could be working in a shop, you know, any demographic within the company, nobody was above this chief exec's breakfast. If it was your birthday in that month, it was more than likely you would get an invitation. And they'd random cherry pick people out, and you would go and you'd say, I'll never forget, a guy was called Jeff Muir, and you used to go and sit with him in Terminal 2 in the Atlantic Suite, Dave. I was working in Terminal 2 at the time, And you just went, had croissants, you know, sandwiches, whatever you wanted for breakfast, cereal, all that stuff. And you could sit there and basically you could throw anything at him, you know, criticise the company. But Mr. Hilarious here, with a good friend of mine, decided that I was going to go beyond that, Dave. On company letterheaded paper, I decided to send fake letters out to loads of people who I didn't like to attend. It was always the first week of the month, the Atlantic Suite. I made the time up. I made the date up. I knew it was the first week of the month. This is on my daughter's life. I did not know when this fucking thing was. And my idea was I would walk past at 9 o'clock. And you're going to think I'm bullshitting, but I swear to you, I would not swear my daughter's life. This is true. My idea was to get these people stood outside the Atlantic Suite, stood there trying to get in. And I would just casually walk past, having going to the toilet or going to Boots or something. Just in my own mind, thinking it was hilarious. And what did I do, Dave? I picked the exact day, not the right time, but the exact day. It started at 8 o'clock. 10 people turned up at 9, and luckily I'd not signed it in the chief exec's signature, I signed it in a PP fake signature, and they're all stood there arguing with this woman who runs it. So I walked past crying, thinking it's hilarious. So what did I do, Dave? Not content with just doing it one month, I decided...
Oh my God.
Let's do it again. So the second month, and this again, I am not, but this is pure David Brent. I was about 21 at the time, just got married, Dave. I'd been married in August 99. We just got married. And I fucking sent him again dinner, right? But what I did was I kept the letter like an idiot on my computer. Encrypted, but it was Windows NT, wasn't it? So you could actually remotely, by this time, Windows NT had Excel had gone over 95, 98. You could actually remotely go on people's computers. Yes. So what I'd done was, I sent them again, and I swear to you, you're going to think bullshit, I picked a Thursday of the first week of the month again at 9 o'clock, and they all turned up again. And that was it, wasn't it? It was fucking memo. I walked past again at the same time, thought it was hilarious, Dave. Nobody really noticed because it was so busy. I thought it was hilarious. My mate thought it was hilarious. IT sort of went through everybody's internal computer then, Dave, for the next 3 to 4 weeks. And they found the paperwork. Now, they weren't allowed to actually... Yeah, exactly. They weren't allowed to actually say to me, we have found this. They had to be sat with me for me, you know, to open it. An internal audit. They had to get an internal auditor in. I mean, I can laugh now. It's 21 years ago. But this fucking guy come. And what I done was, my mate rang me and he went, they're coming over to see you now. They know that it's me and you. And I went, what do you mean? I said, you've not done anything. I'd done it like a fool on my computer and he hadn't, but we'd like posted the letters together.
Right, right. He was an accomplice.
Yeah, so the fucking guy comes. I deleted the file. He comes over and goes, hiya, can you just open this file on your computer, please? And my arse fell out completely. Oh, my arse fell out. And
I just mine went, is. Just listen yeah. to you tell the story.
And I went, yeah. Yeah, no problem. So I opened, I'm fucking 21 years on thinking, I had my own office and everything, had a great little job there. He opens the file, it's fucking deleted. He went, you've deleted it. It was there before. And I went, you're not supposed to look at my personal files. It's data protection. We know that you've done this. And I went, I've not done it. And I fucking deleted it. I was banged to rights, Dave. So in the end, I had to resign. And when I got the next job, obviously, it was a few months between I got it, but it ended up cascading more. The more stuff I saw of the office, it was the relentless. I mean, that's a terrible story that I learned by my mistakes, luckily. But it was hilarious. I can look back. Now, my mate lives in Australia, who did it, and he'll randomly message me going, do you remember that time when you had to leave the airport because of that letter? And I go, fuck off, you were involved in it, you bastard.
All these people whose lives you destroyed. All these people who got their little letters and they're like, oh, the company
all
loves me.
All got dressed up and everything.
You see you next Tuesday, you are.
This guy, I know. I mean, look, I can laugh now, but it's a pure David Brent moment thinking that I was hilarious and it was probably the worst fucking thing I've ever done in my life, career-wise. And just as a human being, Dave, I can laugh about it with you. I've never told you that, have I?
I remember you saying, you know, you used to work at the airport, but I never heard that story. I don't know why. The only thing similar to this that I remember, and unfortunately, you know, I can't tell this in the first person, but again, this is early 2000s. Do you remember when Am I Hot or Not became a thing?
And oh, God, yeah.
Someone had uploaded...
I've got a story, actually, yeah.
Someone had uploaded the head of development. Now, he's an old guy. He's an older guy. So obviously he didn't fare too well on the Am I Hot or Not. But when you rolled over the mouse, you could see where it was uploaded from.
And
our computer names, our laptop names, were our names. So, you know, for me, it'd be Horrocks D, say. So you could see exactly where it was uploaded from on the actual site. Now, I don't think this guy lost his job, because this was about the time I left that company. It wasn't me, by the way. It was someone else. It was just a massive coincidence. But, yeah, I remember thinking, oh, fucking hell, I would not want to be him right now.
Oh, Dave, I've got to tell you another story. Let me tell you another one. So this place where I worked was a telecoms place. And again, Chris putting his fucking mouth in it, you know, his foot in his mouth. So one of the gags was, I was a purchaser, I was like head of buying and stuff, and I worked in a massive office with loads of salespeople, and they were all a fucking pain in the arse, you know, dead selfish salespeople, all driven by, you know, targets, which I understand, but really arsey people, most of them. It was very rare I got on with any of them. They were just knobheads, dead, no manners, no nothing, and I hate that sort of thing. So what we used to do is we used to do this thing where on the radio in Manchester, Key 103, they used to do this gag, and I used to love, you know me, I was the master of, still a master of the phone call wind-ups. I used to be like one of the best at doing that. I mean, some of my voices are terrible nowadays, but I used to be one of the best at just pulling things out of the air blags. So what we used to do is we would get the phone book, and we would phone someone up, and if you did your phone quick enough and the person wasn't looking, you'd put someone through to the salespeople. So I'd ring Pizza Hut up, go for it, the sales, and they go, hello, sales, I think I'm sales. And they go, hello, Pizza Hut. And you go, you've rang me. No, you've rang me. And discussion. And you'd ring random businesses up. Like, I used to ring up this fucking carpet firm in near us, and the guy would go, man. And then you'd ring other people up, and everyone was doing it in the office. Everyone was doing it, right? So this one day, one of the guys got me with an absolute peach, and this woman's like, you just rang, what's your name? And I'm like, I've not even rang it. Yes, you have. This is a joke. So it was just like, everyone was doing it in the companies. Like, when we weren't busy, it was like, someone had just fired some random like car dealership through, and he just ended up with that stupid, awkward conversation. So one of the guys did it to me, so I rang him. And left him a voicemail one morning. I used to go be the first one in. And I'm running my reports. I sang Enrique Iglesias, I Can Be Your Hero, right? You know, I can be your hero, baby, yeah, yeah. Right? On his voicemail. He forwards it to the fucking managing director, who was an absolute arse. He then fucking comes down to the sales office and goes, who the fuck has left me a voicemail serenading me with fucking Enrique Iglesias, his son, won it, Enrique Iglesias, his son, Julio Iglesias, his daddy, went, who the fuck, and I'm sat there, Dave, fucking squirming, like, oh, man, and I looked at this sales guy, and he's going, 1-0, you bastard, and I'm like, you're a prick, right? So this guy, he had a fucking nose, like, he used to call him Jimmy Nail. Now, I know I've got a nose on me, but he looked like Jimmy Nail, right? this is story. So we escalated then. Everyone was trying to one-up each other. On the back of the old Thompson directory was a thing for cosmetic surgery, right? So I'm sat there, and I'm watching him this day, and I thought, I'm going to get you back, you bastard. And we're sat there, and he turned his head and was talking to one of the other sales guys behind about a product. So I rang this number up, and it was a Manchester number. And I put it through, and his number was something like 551. And I put it through to 552, this fucking woman. And she come, this one of the saleswomen, and it come through. And they went, hello, plastic. And she went, oh, Dave, she went mental. Who's put this through to me saying I need plastic surgery? And I'm like, Oh my God. This fucking guy looked at me straight away and was crying. He rings me going, "That was you, you bastard. You couldn't get me, could you?" And she went mental, Dave, and stormed out the office. And he was like, internal memos going, "This needs to stop now. It's not a school playground and all this."
It's mental, isn't it? I'm sure as we go through the episodes, we'll have more and more stories, won't we? Because I'm not going to blow my load, you know, straight away.
No, I've got loads. More, but
yeah. That is awesome. But yeah, again, it just shows, doesn't it, that this is kind of why this series hit home so much. And maybe it's one of those things, Chris, that people who don't get it, don't enjoy it, maybe haven't had that experience in the office so that it doesn't resonate with them. But
this does.
Yeah. I guess for me then, getting to episode one, I forget how condensed this is. And there's literally, even though there's slow moments, there's downtime, there's very little wasted. These are only like half-hour episodes, aren't they? So, yes. I mean, the whole series is written and directed by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant. But when the opening scene comes and you get introduced to David Brent, for me, this is the perfect scene to introduce that character because it tells you everything about David Brent as a person and a manager, because he's interviewing the guy for a forklift driver's job, which, you know, you're working in the warehouse, in the factory or whatever. It's a fucking dangerous job. You need to be trained. You need to be licensed.
I've got forklift truck. I have to do the training every 3 years. I've got my forklift. I did it last year. Again, right. I had it for 15 years, my forklift truck license. You can't just fake it.
Yeah. And he's like, "You haven't passed your test, but, you know, the guy who gives out the jobs is a personal friend of mine." So he's trying to be this guy's best mate. And he's putting everyone else in fucking danger, you know. It just rings him up, you know, "You're right, you old slag, and, you know, has your wife left you yet?" And then when he puts it down, he's like, "Yeah, she did leave him. I forgot about that."
It's that, though. It's that look to the camera. That's what does me. Him and Tim do it the best, Martin Freeman. Ricky Gervais, it's that 1 second glance at the camera, and then he puts his... I love that, Dave, about this series. That is so good for comedy. It's so good.
Yeah, they're just sort of breaking the fourth wall. That gives it that mockumentary feel, doesn't it? That these aren't proper actors. And I guess it, you know, it kind of, at that time especially, played to Ricky Gervais's traits. You know, he wasn't a trained actor. He probably still hasn't ever taken a lesson, I wouldn't have thought. You know, he's just got that natural talent, hasn't he? He just really... He's so good at observing things and the ridiculousness of them, and then, you know, putting them down, and it all feels so organic. You know, it's not this contrived scene. You know, it's not this exposition to tell you about what's going on or what have you. I just think it's absolutely brilliant. And you're right. It's like it's a fraction of a second, isn't it, to look at the camera with a bit of a face on you. You know. And the timing is just absolutely amazing.
Oh, it is. What's interesting, and like you say, this is filmed 20 years ago now, Dave, you know, because we're in 2021, mm-hmm. and it was probably filmed in the 2000s, really, and was released in 2001. Nothing's changed. The technology's changed, as in, you know, everyone's probably working off mobile phones. And I know, as someone who worked in telecoms company and sold, like, you know, the handsets, the headsets, everything, it's gone completely all over. I'm sure everyone's on a proper wireless call centers now, things like that. But just working in a general office, not a lot's changed. My office that I work in, it's very much still paper orientated. They've got, you know, great computers and screens and all that stuff, but a lot of it is purely admin based. And when you look at the office and the ridiculousness of it, and he's when after he's done that bit with the nose and everything, he's hilarious. But
AKA he goes to, for you,
AKA for you, he goes to Dawn and then just fucking offends. It was Jasper Carrot's daughter, and he just fucking offends. Everyone's been up at the crack of Dawn, and she's like, "What?"
It's that constant, like, he's sort of having the conversation, but all the time. He's very, very aware that the camera's there, and he's sort of occasionally glancing over. He's trying to be funny. He's trying to be everyone's best mate and show how funny he is. Right, it's a brilliant line. At one time or another, every bloke in the office has woken up at the crack of dawn. She's like, what?
Oh, it's fucking horrendous.
Fucking offensive bastard.
Yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant.
He's the one, though, isn't he, Dave? He's the manager who's the snidey one, who will always pretend he's your mate. And we've all had bosses, or we've still got bosses like that, I can think of a few, who've always pretended to be your mate. But as soon as you've gone, the knife's in the back. And it's the way he does it. It doesn't really say a lot in this first episode about it, but the whole backstory for me that's always in the background about him being a fucking comedian, I love it. I love the thing that he thinks he's an entertainer over a fucking boss. He's running a paper company, a multi-million pound company, and he's a fucking entertainer. That, for me, is just fucking delusion 101, and I love it. I love the facts. He goes, "I've had a fax from head office." Dawn, why don't you know where that goes? In the bit, and then he goes, "I can have it back." And then it cuts then to the next scene. It's fucking so funny.
But again, you're absolutely right. This is the sort of boss that would absolutely throw you under the bus. But in such a, in a short amount of time, they let you know what this character's like. Because again, when he's having that uncomfortable interaction with Dawn, he's going on about, "Oh, be gentle with me. You know, we were out last night with Finchie. El vino did flow." he's saying about what a massive pisshead he is. And it's a one-way conversation. He's just talking at Dawn all the time and trying to be funny. And then he's saying, what is it about drinking too much? And then he looks at the camera. If drinking every night is too much. And then she just, as an offhand comment, goes, "And every afternoon." And then he turns, doesn't he? He gets really offended. He can dish it out, but he can't take it. And then he's like, what about if I started taking a pop at you, And then, so straight away you see, he's got this ability to switch it around.
Oh, God, because he's about to say something about a weight, isn't he? And then he looks at the camera and just walks off in the end, doesn't he? You can see he looks up and down. And again, he doesn't say it, but just having that observational comedy and awareness. Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, Dave, are absolutely amazing together. What a team, because that, for me, is sensational, a bit of comedy. And it doesn't mean a lot, but it's just, it directs you towards David Brent just being a complete dick. And I think the next scene, though, with Gareth, and we meet Gareth for the first time, and we meet Tim, Martin Freeman and Mackenzie Crook. And I just, that ridiculous dynamic of them two just, he hits him over the head, does the old Budweiser, what's up? Which was around the early 2000s, wasn't it? And then he's going, "Oh, 8 pints last night," and he's reading the paper, and he goes, "Oh my God, look at this, managing team lead." It's just like, Tim's just looking like, whatever, mate.
Yeah.
He's
he's mini Brent, isn't he? He's trying to be popular. He's trying to. What does he think Tim is going to do in that setting? Is he going to go, "Wow, you're the fucking man you are. You're drinking 8 pints on a school night, and you went out with the boss. Fucking amazing, mate." But people do think like that, it's just, I love this interaction. In this first episode, this bickering, this back and forth with them, and Tim just, he's us, isn't he? He seems normal. You get the whole talking heads thing, and he says what his job is, and he's like, "I'm boring myself just talking about it, oops. But you can see that Gareth is an absolute tool, and I think Mackenzie Crook had a hard time convincing them that he was the man to play Gareth for a while. I think they were thinking, like, someone bigger, someone who looks like they could be in the military. I kind of think of someone like, I've never heard this from them, but I get the impression it was like, Bill Paxton, say, would be a good sort of person for that. Someone who you could see who goes in the territorial army and talks like that. But I think it works so much better that you've got this dweeb, this skinny little runt of a guy who thinks he's the man. He thinks he's like this trained killer because he's worked in the TA for 3 years. It's just, it's just brilliant. And you get Brent coming over as well, and he's sort of not really helping the situation. He's in there with Gareth, and he's going on about how hungover he is, again trying to make himself popular. It's like, resolve.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just love this bickering in this first episode with Gareth and Tim.
And you know what it reminds you of, David, with Gareth? And you're so right. The Gareth thing, I mean, the bowl head cut is amazing and stuff. But what I think what resonates Gareth's character with me, and you will say the same, is you've for some reason, a lot of people think that working in an office, like I've worked on the tools for like 15 years, 16 years this week, actually. But for years, I always wanted to be one of the lads, you know, out on the street, getting dirty, getting my hands full of calluses. Dude, that was just something I've always wanted to do. But because I had that background of having six, seven years working in an office before I transitioned to working outside, mm-hmm. I had that foresight of knowing people like Gareth, and you have probably as well, who, because they work in an office, they feel inferior to like the warehouse guys, the guys who are doing the manual stuff, and they have to put this persona on like they're really tough. You know, like one of them, like some guy, yeah. I remember a guy who worked at the airport, and he was all right, he wasn't a bad lad, but he'd always go on like he was some martial arts expert, and he'd say like, he's like, knock everyone out, I'd do anything, I've done bouncers and everything. And then I remember he didn't come in one Monday, and everyone's like, where is he? And he got beat up by someone. I'm not saying that's right, but he'd started a fight with someone, and I can just imagine that. It reminds me of Roger Moore in the Cannonball Run, where he starts on that, goes, I'm Roger Moore, and puts up the karate chop thing, and that guy just hits him with a wrench across the jaw. And I think in the end he admitted, he went, I just started on some guy for no reason, and he gave me a good chewing, but he wouldn't come in for ages because he was embarrassed. He built his persona up like he was like fucking Chuck Norris or something. And that's what Gareth reminds me of. I mean, the TA, fucking, I'm not saying the TA isn't hard or anything, but it's the way Gareth, for me, I think it's perfect casting. Absolute Walter Softy, 6 stone wet through guy who wears a fucking utility belt like he thinks he's an assassin. I just think it's, and that develops more through the series.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't even pick up on that. He's fucking, his phone holder. It's like a gun holster.
Yeah, yeah. So clever, Dave, so clever.
You're right. I kind of saw it without seeing it, if that makes sense. No, it's a brilliant pull up, that. And I agree, especially in retrospect, it's perfect casting. You know, if you'd have put someone big who you'd have thought, well, actually, if they were in a fight, they could probably handle themselves, it wouldn't come off as well as it does with Mackenzie Crook doing it.
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. And then, Dave, I've got to say, looking at this now, I'm, you know, early 40s, watching it, Sterling Gallagher, who plays Jennifer Taylor-Clark, we get introduced to her. David's already alluded to her, saying she might be coming. That's what the fax is about. She comes in and starts talking to Dawn and talk about some smell in the lifts. She is stunning, Dave. I mean, she's been in Coronation Street recently, but she's a very, very attractive lady.
Yeah, and you know what? This is one of those things where I don't remember thinking that, you know, and when I was watching this, I was in my early 20s. So, you know, she'd have been a bit older than me at the time. She didn't really appear on my radar. I'm watching it this time and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But no, that meeting, again, just so brilliant, condensed comedy. But, you know, you've got Brent again. He's putting on like a Jamaican accent, isn't he? he's in a meeting with his boss. You've got the old talking heads. He's saying, well, you know, she's not really my boss. What is it he says? There should be no ego when you're pulling together to do something good. You know, this is where it's like, that's my boss, that is my boss. And so many times you'll see that he's obviously heard something, or he's maybe been on a course or something like that, heard a good phrase that someone else has used and thought, oh yeah, I'll use that again. And again, he's trying to present himself like he's this super, you know, businessman, and he's got all the words and everything, but he's not really believing it. He's just saying the words because he's heard them somewhere else. And you know, he says like about says it's like in comic relief, you know, she might like think she's the boss, but I'm out in Africa, she's in the studio with Jonathan Ross and Lenny Henry, their hands are clean, And I'm down here with starving kids.
Yeah, they're counting the money. But you know, the scene, though, this scene for me is outstanding. And he does one thing in this scene, and it's probably, I don't know if you picked up on it, but she sat there, she's power dressed, she's got the high heels on, the stocking, she's very attractive, Dave. Probably on purpose for the scene, but she's got the short sort of office skirt on, hasn't she? The pin, like, really attractive. And he sat there looking at Dawn, and she's like, did you get the thing? And he's like, no, got the facts.
Did no
whatever.
Get an no agenda.
Get an agenda, yeah, yeah. But it's when, before, as she's about to get serious, she just puts one leg across the other to cross a leg, and you just hear for a split second Brent sort of look at her leg with the side eye and go, And then she starts talking. I don't know if you picked up on that, but he just, I kept thinking in my head, he's definitely pulling one out over her tonight.
I didn't spot that bit, but where it is super obvious is where the phone rings and he says, oh, I'll leave it to go to voicemail. And it's played out loud. And you've got Brent's voice message and he's like, please leave a message. and then it's Finchy. And he goes, and I'll offend, I'll apologise for this. Some of the language, you know, hasn't, it's intentionally played for what it is, but I think it's aged worse, you know. But Finchy says, have you got a hangover, you big puff? And Brent's like, oh, that's offensive, you know. And then he's like, you're in there with Jennifer, what's his name, aren't you? And give her one for me. And Brent, rather than leaping out of his chair, which is what my inclination to do would be, he's like, oh, it's derogatory, you know.
Yes.
And Finchie goes, and stop looking up her skirt. And at that moment, he fucking looks right down, eyes roll up to hers, and he's like, I wasn't, you know. Chris, I just can't comprehend how perfect the timing is. And I don't know, you know, if you see some of the outtakes, I can't imagine they got, you know, 10 good takes. And that just happened to be the one out of 10 really good takes. It seemed to me that a lot of the time, the actors were just pissing themselves. Ricky Gervais seemed to be the worst. And he just ruined the whole scene because he couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah.
So I can only think that this is one of the very few good scenes, but it's just perfect comedy timing for me.
It is. It's brilliant. And I think, like you say, he's 20 years old. There is a couple of things in this episode which are not jarring because it's still hilarious, but there's a couple of things that haven't aged in time, Dave. Obviously, it's the world. And that's the whole point of the show as well. It's about political correctness, isn't it? And this is like the dawn of it really taking off in our world, which it should have done a long time ago. We're not in like an episode of The Sweeney from the 70s where all the women are running around in bloody bikinis and just they're totally inferior to men's or how they're portrayed on the screen. This is the whole point of this show. It's about breaking barriers, about people being offensive, racist, you know, using sex as an agenda, a tool. Just everything about this show is covered in this, and it's got like an underlying current of honesty as well. And David Brent, he is like a dinosaur, but he's almost like a lovable dinosaur because he's stupid. He's just got no control over anybody. No one's got respect for him. He's just a joker. And that scene when she says about the redundancies in the same scene, and he just keeps cutting across her. How many times do you think that must have been taken? Because when you watch him do Afterlife, and there's that scene in the fucking pub with them three guys, Paul Kay, who's Dennis Pennis, and you've got the other two guys who have been in loads of his different, I think some were in The Office, and he's got that guy's going, what does he say? Fucking Harold Shitbum and all this. And you see the outtakes of fucking Tony, Ricky Gervais' character, and his brother-in-law, fucking Ricky Gervais, is crying. And then the guy gets it right. And at the end, he has all these offensive names. And then he's like, at the end, he just goes, and Jamie Redknapp. And Ricky Gervais goes, if you've seen it, haven't you? It's probably one of the best things. And I've watched the outtakes for The Office. Because he has more control over stuff at this point, there's still loads of outtakes, but he probably couldn't be as he is. But you're right, he literally sabotages his own shows, Ricky Gervais, with his laughter.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and he's written the lines, you know, and
yeah.
That's the thing. A lot of this, I was under the impression before I started looking into it that a lot of it was kind of ad-libbed, but it's not. And especially when you go back and you look at the kind of pre-show pilot stuff, you see a lot of the same lines and a lot of the same scenes. And that's the clever thing about it, you know, how it feels so authentic. Jennifer plays, you know, quite an understated role because she has to play absolutely down the middle while Brent is talking over her and stuff. And, you know, that's one of the things like Robert Downey Jr. does when he's interacting with people, you know, and he's talking at the same time as they do. That's kind of a natural type conversation when you've got this fucking douchebag who's just, all he's trying to do is trying to make himself look good again. He's like, oh, is Neil worried about redundancies? Yeah, I am, you know. So, yeah, he just, again, it's a brilliant scene for me, this one. And of course he says, you know, none of this will leave the office. And then the very next thing we get some of the background characters talking about redundancies, so it's leaked immediately, almost, it seems, you know, certainly as far as the scenes lead us to believe. But another thing which takes me back, Chris, is when we get this this guy, this new starter, this temp Ricky Howard, he comes in, and then the first thing that Brent does, he has to do his Bianca impressions, you know, which you'd have had to have been watching EastEnders back then, you know, again in the late 90s and 2000s. I don't know. I've not seen EastEnders for years, Chris. Is Bianca still around? Is she still a thing?
She came back in, I think, last year. Sam still watches it, so I do sort of, like last night, Sam had it on and I had YouTube on, and they still... The characters, her kids are in it, and she's been in and out. I think she come back for a few years, and then she left about 3 years ago. But she does pop up now and again, so she's still going. Because Bianca and Ricky, if anyone obviously doesn't understand who they are, were like this young teenage couple, and she had a gob on her, and all she used to do was, as he was called, Ricky, was Ricky, and that's actually become. It sounds ridiculous, but it's a pop culture reference in it, even nowadays,
in
20, 25 years
yeah,
in the UK.
Yeah.
It is. It's ridiculous. If someone's called Ricky, someone will always shout Ricky. It's so bad, isn't it? But everyone does it.
But again, that's just Brent. So rather than having this air of authority around him, he's just trying to have a laugh, have a bit of a joke around with this guy. And, you know, he's showing him around the office. Like, you know, he goes to accounts and he goes, you know, this lot are all mad. And he goes, especially him, and points to Keith, who's got this deadpan expression. And I fucking love Keith.
I did.
I did see, you know, a documentary, you know, Gervais and Stephen Merchant were talking after, and they were trying to figure out that even they still didn't know if that was just him. You know, yeah. And that's how he was.
So good. So, and it's when he goes, he's Billy the Bass, the fish on the wall, like, yeah, the sink, and he presses it, and he went, can you get that out of petty cash? You know, as if he's like, fuck it, we'll use the company's money. And that guy's like, just like...
He's like, can't put a price on comedy. He's literally come out of a meeting about redundancies and stuff. People are going to lose their jobs, you know, struggling to pay their mortgage potentially. And he's like, can't put a price on comedy. Because, I mean, those things were huge in the kind of early 2000s, weren't they? The old singing fish on the wall.
And the thing, you know, then he goes to get the guy off the... Is it the PG Tips advert? He was everywhere, wasn't he? Johnny Vegas did the adverts, didn't he?
That was the monkey. That was
the monkey,
with Johnny Vegas, wasn't it?
Johnny monkey. Vegas. Yeah, that's what I meant. Monkey. Yeah, that was it. And he had it. He just points at it, doesn't he? Like, smiling.
So, yeah, it's Flat Eric. And he's just pointing up. And what's one of my favourite phrases, Chris? With David Brent's shit-eating grin. He's just pointing at it and just looking at it. But he doesn't say anything. And the guy who's with him doesn't laugh or anything. But Chris, we talk about things that don't age well, right? Then he goes up to his co-worker, you know, brown-skinned Asian employee. And he goes, oh, this guy does the best Ali G impressions, you know, and he's like, and he says, nah, I think you're confusing me with someone else. And then Brent says, Oh, no, no, no. It's the other one. And I think, Chris, you know, in terms of, like, buttock-clenchingly embarrassing, I think this is the moment for me where it's like, oh, Christ, I can't believe, you know... Even at the time, I was thinking, I can't believe he's just fucking said that. I can't believe he's showing it. But also, I think what's clever about it, Chris, you know, and again, on our VHS Strikes Back podcast, we go back and we watch a lot of things in the 80s and the 90s, and you recognise how much racism is in these old movies. And it's just there, isn't it? And then, you know, it's all played for laughs, and then, you know, the people of colour are the ones who are at the butt end of the joke. I think the clever thing about this is, it's Brent who's the butt of the joke, isn't it? It's his outdated fucking, or, you know, inherent, inbuilt fucking racism that's just coming out there. And the fact that this guy uses that derogatory term, and then Brent goes, "Ooh, that's racist."
Walks
again. Just the comedy timing on it is just perfect. I just don't know how you could improve on that scene.
You can't. It's amazing. There's a couple of things he does that with people, and then David leads on to the stupid fucking jelly in stapler scene. So Tim and him are having an argument. He comes over with this new lad, doesn't he? Comes over with him. They're chatting away, and another Tim's like, "Hey, mate, you're right." And he goes, "This is Gareth. This is my assistant." Gareth went, "Yeah, I'm the assistant regional manager." He went, "No, you're assistant to the regional manager." And he's saying it all the way through.
It's and a reoccurring line, isn't it?
Yeah, and he's talking about his car. And he went, yeah, he's got a car. He goes, "I've got a TR3, bought it for $1,200 worth. $3,000.
Yeah.
He's like, "I'm giving it." And then he turns around and goes, "Oh my God, look at this. Right, you're a witness." And then he pulls the jelly out and he goes, and he's like, and Tim goes, "What makes you think it's me?" And he's got a packet of jelly eating it. He gets me every time.
But again, you're looking for the boss to actually take control of the situation, aren't you? You know, either walk away, this is nonsense, I haven't got time for this, but it's the way he's trying to play along with the joke. And then, yeah, I love the thing, he puts his hand in and he's like, don't do that, you know, there are starving people. Look straight at the camera, which I hate.
Yeah. Eat your way through it, he says.
But when Gareth's saying about be a witness, and you know, he's talking about Tim and he's going, "You need to discipline him." And then Brent's like, "Ooh, kinky."
Yeah, because that's when he says, why has he put your stapler in the jelly? Gareth goes, "Because I told him I don't like it. I don't like the shape of it. It moves." And then Brent, instead of bollocking him, goes, "Oh, he's found a weakness."
He saw a weakness and he took advantage of it.
What a manager.
But then, yeah, he says, you know, the thing is with practical jokes, you need to know when to stop. Again, not a terrible line, probably a line that he's heard someone else. But then Tim goes, "It's not a trifling matter." And so he just completely invalidates what he's just said, bursts out laughing, and then goes and gives Tim a massive high five.
And then doesn't that Ricky say something about custard or something?
Oh, yeah, he should have put him in custody.
Custody, but then he stands there then awkward, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's hugging him both, and he's like, oh, what of a dessert?
He's trying to think of a witty comeback, isn't he, with a dessert? Yeah. Oh, just so brilliant, Chris. I love it.
Oh, Dave, and I mean, what's weird is this is half an hour. And I've not watched it for about 2 years or something. So I know it beat by beat, but you forget how many references for The Office that me and you have used that are actually from the first episode alone.
Yeah.
And there's loads. And the next scene, fuck me, is fucking poor Dawn's there on a dinner reading something. She's reading a Ben Elton book. He comes over. She's got like a mouthful of fucking, brioche or something. A brioche. I'll let you explain this because you explained this to me last night so well and I was pissing myself after we finished on the phone.
Oh, I love it. I love it, Dawn. So, like I say, Lucy Davis, I think, and I don't think I'd really noticed before, that how great her performance is. Just that understated performance. Like you say, it's probably lunchtime. She's minding her own business. She'd sat down And Brent comes over and he's like, had a bit of a scare earlier. I found a lump. But not only is he saying the words, as he says, I thought I found a lump. He's got hold of his nut. And she is at nut level as well, eating this sandwich, big mouth of brie. And he's like, yeah, I thought I had testicular cancer. I check myself regularly. And then he puts his hands back in his pockets and he's like, cancer of the old testicles.
The context of, has it just disappeared then, the lump, in the space of a couple of hours?
She's got a mouthful of a sandwich and she's stopped chewing and just stopped there and he just walks off. And she's like,
fucking.
Yeah, and then puts the brie sandwich down. Chris, I had to rewind this one and I watched it again because I was just like, that is so brilliant. It's just utterly brilliant. And again, completely inappropriate. You know? It's just, like I say, for me, there's a lot of things that Lucy was doing in this episode that were wonderfully understated that I never really picked up on before. You know, when I've watched it multiple times, I'm more focused on what Brent's doing and some of the people who are talking. But it's the other people who are reacting to the person who's talking that I picked up on more this time. And I just think it's a brilliant performance.
It's so good. And that's when he gets harangued by all the couple of the women grab him, don't they? Like, are we getting redone? And in the end, he has to call a meeting. He's supposed to keep his gob shut. But obviously, everyone knows now. Well, Gareth doesn't know because we've had the scene with Tim stacking the files up, haven't we?
Yeah.
And he's stacking them up. And he's like, do you know the price for whatever this paper is? And he goes, you'll have to ring me. You're on voicemail. Leave me a message. And as he's leaving a message, he fucks off, doesn't he? And he went, you're not there. And they're filming.
And then he just sticks his head up, doesn't he? Just to check.
Puts his head down. But that's the scene, though, with the fucking redundancy chat. And Brent's there. And Gareth comes in and goes, and the scene leader, can you just whisper it to me? And then that guy, what's he called? The old bloke who's
Malcolm.
Been there for years. Malcolm.
He's like, do you trust me?
Can you just get on with it? And he goes, I'm the assistant regional manager. But no, the assistant
to the regional manager.
The team leader. And David's doing this speech. And he's like, no, use it my family. And I'm the father of this family. And I'm not having someone else come and molesting my kids. That's down to me. And I'm just like, what the fuck? If anyone's going to molest my kids, it's me, or something he says. My children, sorry.
That's what he said. Pick up on that. Did he say I'm molesting
my children? He says, he goes, you're my family. I'm the head of the family. I'm the father of the family. And I'm not having someone else come and molest my children. That's down to me, or something he says. He's so funny.
Well, the thing, you know what? I've completely missed that line. But yeah. The thing I picked up on more, again, the whole thing with Gareth, I think they tried to shoot this a little bit differently, but again, it gave it a bit of a sitcom feel where Gareth's trying to find out about the redundancies, and then people just come in and start interrupting them, and then you have this massive meeting. But, you know, Gervais and Merchant said, it just feels too much like a sitcom, and that's not what we want. I want it to feel like a documentary. But it's the fact that Brent, he's making checks. He's writing checks that he can't actually cash. He's telling people, you know, it'll all be fine. And then it's Dawn who throws him under the bus, isn't it? It says, well, I was in that meeting. And so, you know, again, he just kind of deflects the whole thing with Malcolm when he's pressing him. You know, this is a question of trust. And again, it's not, is it? But he's trying to bully him into that, you know, into just shutting up. And then by the time the meeting's adjourned, you know, nothing's resolved at all. He hasn't made a positive impact. He hasn't put people's minds at rest or told them the truth or anything. And then as people are walking off, you've just got Gareth saying, do you trust me? No one's listening to him. Just fucking amazing.
Amazing. She puts her hand up, doesn't she, the woman in an accounts who he said, like a fucking wild child.
He's a bit mad. Just,
put your hand down. And he's going to David. Yeah, I would have done the same. I would have said the same as what you've... And fucking Brent's like, what are you... And I think that's a shame, though, Dave, for when he did Life on the Road and that you couldn't have had Tim and Mackenzie Crook. It's brilliant, yeah. Life on the Road, the movie. Yeah. However, they were part of the show. Even the Christmas specials as well. It is Ricky Gervais on his own, pretty much, isn't it? So... Yeah, they're so good. The dynamic of it is brilliant. And that's when we get all day, the final scene. Fucking hell. Fucking Ricky's there and he's talking to him about, how's your first day? And it's all nice and he's doing the old... He does the tie thing a lot, doesn't he, David Brennan? Does that with his neck and everything. And he's chatting to him and he's talking about practical jokes and Dawn walks in. And you can see Ricky's like up for it, thinking, oh, this is going to be comedy gold. Yeah. You're getting made redundant because you've been stealing fucking post-it notes. Yeah. I'm sat there thinking, what world would that have ever been fucking a practical joke? And Ricky just puts his head down to say, holy fuck. Yeah. It's hilarious. Hilarious.
It's the awkwardness, the uncomfortable kind of nature of the whole scene. It's just fucking terrible. And Ricky doesn't know where to look, does he? You know, he's got this bell end, you know, trying to play this practical joke, which isn't funny. But he keeps it going for a while, doesn't he? You know, he's saying about, oh, have you got your Bible on you? You know, thou shalt not steal unless it's 12p posting notes or something like that. And then he's on about, like, what is it? He's got like saying you could use them for other stuff. And then Ricky says, oh, roaches. And he just goes, caught you, you drug dealer. No, I'm only joking.
And he went, and what's better, Dawn, is we can just get rid of you because you gross misconduct.
So we don't have to pay you any severance.
And she starts crying.
But again, Dawn's like reaction and acting here is brilliant. And then when she finally, you know, so we get this awkward time, don't we, where he says, and that's the joke, you know. And so she kind of comes around to the fact that it was a joke. And she's like, you wanker. And then he's like, am I? You know, again, just the interaction of it. I know it's in the writing, but the performance is brilliant as well. She's like, such a sad little man. He's like, ooh. You
know? Yeah, he starts reading the facts, doesn't he? And she's having a go at him. He goes, oh, I think I better crack on with this now.
Yeah.
It's so good. The whole dynamic of that scene is what The Office is about. It's just cringe. Toe curling. Oh, Dave, I can feel the hairs on the back of my neck. Whenever I watch it, I'm laughing, but I'm also like, oh, holy shit. And that is the point of this show.
It is butter-clenchingly embarrassing, isn't it? You just, you know, you're sucking back on your teeth. You're like, oh, I can't believe he's done that, you know. And every time I watch it, I just, oh, this scene is so awkward, but it's so funny because he gets it so wrong. I mean, we talk about the last scene. That is the last proper scene, but I love the way that it ends. Again, you've got the talking heads, and again, David Brent, he's talking about, he's saying what he thinks people want to hear, you know, what he perceives as being a good manager should say. And he's talking about investment in people. He's talking about this Greek guy who said, David, will you be the godfather to my child? Pause. And then he goes, we had to let him go in the end. He was rubbish. He was rubbish.
Yeah, then it hits, doesn't it, the music.
It's just, again, you know, he sort of breaks his own character, which is a character within a character. It's just, it's so clever, Chris. And I've watched this so many times, I've never really tried to go back and analyse it and think, well, why is this funny? But I just, my admiration from it, I've seen this, I wouldn't say 100, I've seen this, all the series, so many times, at least tens of times. Maybe. And it's just amazing. I just never get bored of it. I just love it. And then when I try and actually think about it and how they made up these different scenes, the dialogue, the acting performance, it just gets better for me.
It does. It does, Dave. Honestly, it's strange because The Office UK. I know I've never really watched The Office US. I haven't. I know everybody uses that meme of, you know, it's happening, and
yeah.
Steve Carell's character, think Michael Scott, runs out of the office studying everyone, and everyone uses that when there's breaking news on something. You always see it on Twitter and everything. Never watched it, but this, the way they shot this in 14 episodes all together, well, 13, and then you've got the Life on the Road, haven't you? 14. Yeah. So you've got the, you know, it's the Fawlty Towers formula. Two yeah. series, and then like you've mentioned to me off the podcast, they were going to go with three, and I think after you said it, I was like, yeah, I think I've watched the same documentaries and forgotten, but it just works. And what gets me, and it's something we're going to do every episode, Dave, isn't it, is we're going to talk about what our favourite scene was from this show. So if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind going first, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course. While I think about what mine is, so
yeah, what yours is, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So we're not going to score it at all, because it'll always be on our scoring scales. If we were on our other podcast, for me, and I'm sure you, it would be top. So there's no point. It's one of my favourite TV shows ever. So I'm not scoring it at all. We're not going to do that by episode, but we are going to pick out our best scenes from it. So for me, I've been thinking about, I've watched it like twice before we were recording. I'm like, I love the jelly scene. I love the jelly and the stapler scene, because that is just the ridiculous shit that you put up with in an office where somebody goes, you took my stapler. Have you got my ruler? And it's like, how many pieces of paper have you put in that printer over there? And this still goes on in 2021. It's fucking pathetic, but it is.
Got you fucking, Gareth's got his name, but he's not got enough room on the stapler to put Gareth, so Garrett. It's Garrett.
Garrett, yeah. Obviously, Tim throws out the window, but I love that scene. But I actually think, watching it now, my favourite scene, and it's that one thing for me, and this is what I love about The Office, it's just one thing in a scene that I get Ricky Gervais, is when, I said it before, when he's with Jennifer and he is looking up a skirt, and just as she crosses her legs, he's perverted, like that, and then she starts the meeting and she doesn't pick up on it, and neither does Dawn, but you can clearly see, and I'm thinking, he has put that in the wank bank for the evening, David Brennan. He will be dining on that fucking cross of legs, and I don't know what it is, it just gets me every time. It's so, you'll have to see it, Dave, it's a slight thing. And that line I said about the redundancy thing about the children, if anyone's going to molest my children, interfere with my children, it's me, or something like that, he says. It's ridiculous. But that one scene is brilliant, the Jamaican bit and effort. And it's just that bit that, for me, is just exactly what David Brent is all about. So, yeah, what about yourself?
So I was tempted by the whole Jennifer meeting scene as well, I must admit. But to be different, I'm going to go for the Ali G impersonation scene, because for me, that's where it goes up a notch in terms of how, I don't know if edgy is the right word, but it's not afraid to tackle like racism, because everything outside of that is, you know, it's funny. It's brilliant. We've been laughing about it going back through it. But in that moment, you're like, oh, there's probably nothing that is safe, you know. And again, it's the fact that Brent is the one who's the butt of the joke here. You know, he's the one who's being outdated and clearly has these, you know, inbuilt racist feelings. He talks about, you know, the fact that he doesn't have a sign on his office like only white people. You know, he's like trying to protest too much a bit. And so, yeah, for me, That was an indication of what was to come, that, like, nothing is safe. Everything is fair game with this series.
That's amazing. Amazing. That's a great pick as well, David. I can't wait. Knowing what's coming up, some of this stuff in these series is some of my favourite comedy, Dave. It's just stupid, and I cannot wait to go through it. I've got some great stories, I'm sure you have. I just cannot wait to through it.
And you know, one of the things we didn't do, Chris, at the top of the show, we didn't tell people what our plans were.
So. Oh, yeah. We don't know.
So what we're going to do, we're going to recap and go through and obviously tell our stories and what have you of the first two Office seasons. So this is the UK Office, So, and then you've got two Christmas special episodes as well. So we'll cover them. That's 14. And then we'll finish off with Life on the Road, the movie as well. So 15 episodes and that's it. And we'll be done. And honestly, Chris, the sort of childlike enthusiasm, the excited nature, you know, that I think we've both had coming into this. It's just, I haven't had it for a while where I'm so excited about getting onto a new project. And the hardest thing, I think, is going to be not to binge it. I've intentionally watched that first episode and I'm trying to clear my mind of what's coming. So I've purposely stopped, you know, I've not gone to episode two. And now, as soon as we've finished this recording, I can finally watch it again. So yeah. that's, for me, that personal kind of self-discipline to not go ahead. Because I know as we're talking about it, I'll start to muddle up the episodes and the scenes and stuff. So, yeah. But honestly, I can't wait for this project to get going.
Oh, we've wanted to do this for so long. And we've talked and talked about it. And now we're doing it, and I'm so pleased. We were like, the amount of people, obviously, hopefully we've got some of our listeners, my other podcasts, and some of our good friends, but this has been in the back burner from day dot, Dave, hasn't it? We've talked about doing an office podcast from day dot. It was something that brought us together as friends. It's something that, even over the years, it's just stupidly, like, we've talked about and things like that. So, yeah, it's something I really, really can't wait to go over it. But we have got some new social media channels, guys. So on social media, if you want to give us a follow, it's at Back to the Off. That's Back to the Off. And the reason is because we can't get back to the office, so we thought we're going back to the off. So that's on our social media. But the email address, and we have got one, so send in any observations, any comments about the show, what you like, dislike, anything like that, just get it in there. Let's open discussion as always. It's Back to the Office Pod at gmail.com. And I am really, really excited by this, Dave. I really, really am.
It should be great. And you can also get us at several other podcasts. So you can get us at the VHS Strikes Back, where we cover retro movies, going back to that kind of golden era of home video. We've got the Comics in Motion podcast, where we have pretty much an episode every day, not just Chris and I. We have a whole bunch of other great guys who talk about all things in kind of comic book movies and actual comics. And, you know, we've got shows about classic comics going back to like the 30s and 40s. We've got Star Wars comics. We've got topical discussion about, you know, what's coming up in the next few years and what have you. And also, of course, Chris, we've got the CD Reality Cast, where we cover various, it's usually reality dating shows, isn't it? So at the minute, we're doing the things like The Bachelor, Temptation Island. So if anyone can accuse us of anything, Chris, it's not that we're not eclectic. But, mate, amazing. This has been an absolute pleasure. And the one final pleasure I'm going to get from this episode is to say, how are you going to finish us off today?
Fuck. I didn't even see it coming. What is wrong with me, Dave? What is wrong with me? We've done
coming.
Fucking hundreds of emails, hundreds of podcasts that we've done. And, oh, my God, I cannot believe you've just done that to me. I wasn't even expecting it. I'm sat here like, I'm ready to press fucking stop on the recording, and you've absolutely done me, Dave. Absolutely done me. Oh,
well, okay, so I'll dig you out of a hole here, because what you could have said, Chris, is one of my favourite lines from Tim in this episode. You could have said, Dave, you're a cock.
You're fucking right. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.